Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St. Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to another edition of The Podyssey. Feels like it's gone quick this month. I don't know if that's just me. But nice to see you, chaps. I'm here with Nick, Sam and Roberto, as always. Hello, chaps.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Right, we've got a lot to get through today, including a watch-along of one of the maddest films I've ever seen, to be honest. But that is all to come. First of all, let's have a bit of a chat about what's been going on since we last spoke. Sam, what have you been enjoying?
Oh, what have I been enjoying recently? Well, we had the BAFTAs not too long ago.
Yeah.
I think last weekend or the one before.
Yeah.
So, yes, we're still kind of discussing all the BAFTA wins.
Okay. So what is there any BAFTA wins that we, I guess, okay, what is there any BAFTA wins we strongly disagree with?
I don't know if there were any ones like really I went like, no, but...
What did Sinners win?
Sinners won quite a few, I think. Yeah. And screenplay.
That's fair.
And score.
I have to admit, a surprising win, but one I was actually quite happy with was, I believe her name's pronounced Vunmi Masako as a for supporting actress. I was quite surprised because I think people were thinking, you know, I can't remember who else was in the category, actually.
Chase Infinity, I think.
Right, yes.
Like
yeah.
Another and...
Tiana Taylor as well. Yeah. That, I thought for sure Tiana Taylor was going to get it. So I was quite surprised and happy for a Brit. And her speech that she gave was very lovely. So that was nice. I think Sinners and One Battle After Another picked up some equally as many.
Which might be laying the groundwork for the Oscars.
Yeah, Oscars coming soon. So Oscars is March the 15th, I think. Yeah, so... By the time you're listening to this, the Oscars may or may not have happened. Yeah. BAFTA is quite often a precursor. But yeah, I thought it showed the films in a good state. Like, there's some innovative, different films in there. Like, Sinners, not like anything really anyone's seen.
I think so.
One Battle After Another. Like, I really enjoyed that film.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen anything like it, really. It's a kind of new, different types of film, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They've both got loads of kind of different genres informing them and so many different kind of new techniques and interesting bits of filmmaking going on in both, yeah.
It also invokes a sort of like, is in the new class of filmmakers to... Like, I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson has made a few films already here or there, but Ryan Coogler, I suppose, and he's made a bunch of films, but as they sort of become more into the like scope of it all, they're like sort of people you want to look out for now. More than ever, and it's great for UK filmmakers as well, with lead actor winner Robert Aramayo as well, which I genuinely, you know, that was quite a surprise.
That was a big surprise for me. I was like, no way.
Now, Timothy, you feel what?
Yeah, I mean, Timothy sort of, I mean, he's got his chops as well, but I can't even see it for him winning an Oscar, really.
What, to Chalamet?
No.
Who'd you be your pick?
Well, we're doing a sweepstakes at work.
Right.
And my pick is Wagner Moura, who is a Brazilian actor in the film The Secret Agent, which is nominated as well for a non-English language film and I think more was it best film? Anyway.
Yeah, so it is. Yeah, as well.
Yeah. And best picture, okay. I've seen the film. I really loved his performance. I thought it was very subtle yet powerful. And I just think it spoke to me more than other performances. Although Leo DiCaprio, I can see also picking
it
up too.
Also, I think, I guess for him, for me, the only thing that maybe would stop him from winning is that it feels like quite an ensemble film.
It's not really his film, is it? Yeah. Although I thought he was great in that film. I actually thought, so he won it for The Revenant. He won Oscar for The Revenant. Yeah. I mean, I get it. He put the work in. Didn't look fun to film, but I don't know.
There are better. He's done better. I think the best and that.
I thought it was absolutely amazing, this film. Like, properly funny, and I really got it. You know what I mean? I really got what his character was doing. Yeah, I thought it was great. Also, Speaking of work and the Odyssey, we need to take what Nick says very seriously now. He's now supervisor. Yeah. Congratulations, Nick.
As of today.
So thank you.
Hot off the press news. We now have a supervisor in our midst, so everybody listen up at the back. Right, yeah. So my voice sounds very echoey. Sorry, I hope you can hear that sounding echoey. I'll sort that out in the next break. But yeah, so I thought the BAFTAs, yeah, showed film industry in good state, I think.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson said it right at the end. He was like, if you don't think good films are being made anymore, you can bleep off, he said. Yeah, and I kind of agree with that. I do think, like, there are, I think, like, every decade has its own trends and issues and stuff. But, you know, overall, I think there is lots of good, innovative filmmaking coming out.
Yeah.
I still haven't quite dared to watch Hamnet yet.
It's good.
I know it's going to be good. I was
so if it's not your thing, I know you said last time it wasn't not doesn't seem like it'd be your thing, but I mean, keep an open mind. You'll probably get around to it eventually.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. And if I'm in the right mood, I'll enjoy it. I by the way, I don't remotely think it's going to be bad. Amazing. Right, looks amazing. Just don't think it's from him.
It's very low.
Exactly. The tagline of Hamnet is literally "Keep your heart open." So, Emil, you got some.
Right, some... Maybe the tagline should is speaking to you. Shakespeare in love, but it will do for now.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, that was a short but sweet intro. We're going to come back. We're going to look at some of the things coming up in the next few weeks that you guys are excited about, including a new film by Sam Raimi, which has led us to the Evil Dead 2 watch along, which me as a non-horror fan grudgingly took part in ahead of this episode. So we will be discussing all things coming up and Evil Dead 2 after this break. Okay, welcome back to part 2 of the Podyssey in March. Doesn't feel like March, feels like January the 3rd or something, the way it's raining outside. But, okay, chaps, so we're going to have a look at some of the things coming up that you're keen to get people's eye on. So I'll tell you what, Sam, we'll start with you. What's coming up in the next few weeks that people can look out for at the Odyssey?
Sure, so we've got a few more screenings of Sentimental Value coming up, which has been out for a while, but still definitely worth coming to see if you haven't had a chance to see it yet. It's a Norwegian film with Stellan Skarsgård and Renate Reinseth. It's really quite a great, lovely film. The director's previous film, The Worst Person in the World, it's probably one of the best films of the decade so far,
wow.
I think. And I'd probably put this one in the same category. I think they're probably, for me, on par. Although they have pretty different tones, I'd say, and they're kind of striking different.
Can you give us the premise? Because I watched the trailer of this and I thought this looked really interesting. I couldn't fully work out from the trailer what was going on here. Somebody, I don't want to give a spoiler, but somebody's died?
Yeah, yes. So it's about this family with two daughters and the father, and the mother has died a while ago, I think, when they were still children, I think, or certainly a couple of years before.
It's definitely in the background.
And it's kind of about this family kind of reconciling, and they all have all their different careers and how they kind of come into conflict with each other. The dad is like a famous film director who's quite pretentious, I suppose, and his daughter is a theatre actress, and they have a lot of conflict. It's a really lovely film, very funny as well. And it kind of is an interesting portrait of Norway and Oslo and Norwegian culture, and how that is both very Western and somewhat Americanized, but also still very distinct, and it has its own clear identity as well. So it's interesting to see it be nominated for so many Oscars and stuff, because it is kind of at home there, but also feels quite distinct from the other nominees.
Yeah, nice. I do fancy that. And Skarsgård, he's a Scandinavian. They're Scandinavian.
I think they are Norwegian, or maybe they're Swedish. Yeah,
Swedish.
I think they might be Swedish. Yeah. But there's such crossover in language, you can get away with it.
Yeah, nice. It's good one.
It's really good film.
Nick, What are you excited about?
So I already did a quick mention of The Secret Agent. So, and that is my pick of the month on socials as well. So I'll stick with that. This is a film that's set in 70s Brazil during the time of a military dictatorship. And you're following a man by the name of Armando. However, he does, oh, I can't remember. He's got like two names at that time because he's sort of... So I don't want to give too much away either, you know. He's sort of a person who has done something which is against the system, and he is in hiding to a certain degree. But he also returns to his hometown to find more information about his family, because his family have disappeared. And while he tries to find out this information, there are these forces that come back to bite. And are trying to do the same to him as well. So it's a very sort of like grounded approach, I feel, towards the sort of the ideas and the concept of it and the historical context around it. But it, the film stylistically does transport you back to the 70s as a decade overall, because it has this like grainy filter and it's lit so like orange and yellows and reds, and it's beautiful colours. And the acting is so like subtle but very powerful. And even in the side characters, you really sometimes you only meet them for 10 minutes, but you're convinced that you've known them your whole life. And there's some twists in there as well that I didn't see coming. It's also got one of those, you know, like you see a film and you see a fantastic like a cinema scene, and it's got one of those in it as well, which I really appreciated as a lover of film as well. So definitely one to watch out for. And it's also been, you know, as we've been talking about it, nominated for Academy Awards. He won the Golden Globe, Wagner Moura, for Best Actor. Although I don't really agree with their separation of comedy, drama.
Yeah, that's always been weird.
Comedy, musical. At least it gives more sort of, you know...
more people a chance.
Yeah, more people a chance to do it. We have that on this, well, in a couple of weeks' time, on the 24th of March at 7:30. I think we've got a showing in April as well, which is ready to book as well.
Yeah, I think that one looks really good. And you know what? Again, I don't know why I keep wanging on about the standard of filmmaking at the moment, but there's something going on at the moment where films are different and exciting. And it's almost like so many films... You don't want to give spoilers, and the trailers don't want to give it away. So, you know, like we talked about Sinners earlier.
Yeah.
That's another one. There's so many films that proper new and interesting stories are being told that we're back to the days of trailers not giving too much away. Do you know what I mean by that?
Thank you, Ernest.
Yeah, I think that's really exciting.
I mean, still don't watch trailers. I just like, because even visual spoilers for me, like, I think it's like what you're saying is true, but I'm like, I won't even go for like visual. If I see like visuals that I might be surprised by in the cinema, I'm like,
yeah,
I saw the trailer for one last talk about yesterday, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to the kitchen, I don't want to see it.
Yeah, I walk into the kitchen and he's like, I'm trying to keep away from the trailer. I'm like, okay, cool.
Sorry, I interrupted you, Nick.
No, I just wanted to say that there are so many, I mean, especially when you're me and Roberto and up in the projection room, and you see how many versions there are of certain trailers, where they might only be like 30 second cuts, but there's so much that, I mean, I suppose no one has actually seen the film, but there's only so much you can divulge in that information as well, where you sort of just want to keep away.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So, Roberto, I know you've got one you're particularly excited about, but Sam and Niff, you got any others you want to talk to us about before we...
Yeah, so there's this film that's like on my radar, and I'm not really sure if it's necessarily for me, but I'm very intrigued to see it. It's The Moment, which is the Charlie XCX mockumentary, even. It's kind of a... I don't really know. It's kind of in a league of its own.
I think it's a very meta film.
Yeah.
Sorry to take over, sir.
No.
But I'm a fan of Charlie XCX. I'm quite looking forward to watching the film, if I have the night off. And it's a very meta mockumentary about the release and the tour of her album called Brat, which was like took over the summer last year. Mm-hmm. And Even the style is like, it's got that acid chewing gum green over it, and it's I think it's just meant to be like a sort of funny take on how
she feels in the moment of her career, and whether it's taken off or like she could like crash back down to sort of like not being on the charts.
Yeah, being more obscure.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like one of those that could be really good or miss a bit. Do you remember there was that thing, you know, like these meta kind of subversive films? You know, there's that thing a few years ago where I think it was Joaquin Phoenix and James Franco did a thing about Joaquin Phoenix becoming a rapper. Yes. Remember this?
No.
It was yeah.
I think it was called I'm Still Here.
Yeah, it's as mad as it sounds. And it's
that
like,
crazy.
It didn't, for me, it didn't quite land because it was trying to be too clever.
Mm.
I sometimes worry about, so I think this sounds potentially really good, potentially might not quite hit the mark. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I guess the question to us here is, did you guys have a brat summer? Because I didn't.
I think I kind of did have a brat summer. Yeah, I definitely listened to it.
The album over and over again.
Yeah. I've not listened to that album. I've not listened to it once, Charlie XX, really, unless it's like popped on the radio. I saw her do a bit of Glastonbury while I was in a pub. So I'm like very just out of the loop with her.
You could see this, and this could be
Brat Summer.
I also got Alexander Skarsgård in.
So. It does, doing a crazy performance by looks of it. So, like father, like son.
I mean, A24 distributing the film, and just to speak to what the film could be about, A24 got a merch shop, and they released a green glitter, sparkly lighter that sold out.
Something's going on.
Yeah.
Right, so Roberto, you are very excited about Sam Raimi's new film, which has prompted our watch along of Evil Dead 2, which I'll get onto in a minute. But do you want to talk to us about this new Sam Raimi film?
Yeah, so
and talk to people a bit about Sam Raimi as well, because I don't usually assume that people know
what we're going. Yeah. So I actually did a push for this film last night, and when I said a film I'm really personally looking forward to is Send Help, I had someone in the audience go, "Oh, Like they were surprised. They were like, "Really, that film?" Because they were just
thought you would have helped.
Well, maybe. So we're showing this Thursday 19th March at 7:30. It's the new film by Sam Raimi. It stars Rachel McAdams, who he previously worked with on Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, and Dylan O'Brien as well. You may know from Maze Runner, and he did a film you saw recently called Twins, which apparently is actually
really good.
Nice. So he's kind of having a bit of a moment as well. But essentially, this film is about she's like a middle manager. Is that what she is, or she's like a strategy and planning? Linda Little. Is that her name? If I remember the poster correctly. Linda Little, and she's working at this company that Dylan O'Brien takes over, and he begins to treat her really terribly. And then on a flight somewhere to do a business, the plane crashes, and they both end up on a desert island. And essentially, the tables turn again. Don't want to give too much away. I've purposefully like avoided everything outside of the synopsis. But essentially, I was quite worried about this film because when I saw the trailer, I was like, "Oh, it looks a little like generic, or maybe of like just a little like too on the kitsch genre-fied side." Actually, no, that's not the way to say it. Just didn't look particularly appealing to me. But then loads of good word of mouth came out. And apparently people are basically saying this is like Sam Raimi's return to form, which is a great thing because Sam Raimi just loves making people suffer in his films. And this even extends to the Spider-Man films. Because think about Spider-Man 2, where there's just that whole stretch of the film where Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man is just like tried to get stuff done and he can't because like he needs to, you know, his rent is due. The waiters won't serve him. Bruce Campbell won't let him into the theater. And that all stretches back to the Evil Dead films where Bruce Campbell was, as we will talk about, getting laying everything on the line, let's say. We'll talk about it in a minute. But this looks to be like a really funny, entertaining, dark comedy with Rachel McAdams in a really kind of great, ferocious role. And I'm really looking forward to that.
And I like the concept as well. Everyone's had those bosses.
Oh, yeah.
Some people dream of that, don't they?
Yeah, well, I think that's another thing. There's a bit of wish fulfillment in there as well. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And I think his style of horror comedy is truly one of a kind.
So, speaking of which, my goodness, we had a watch along for this pod and we watched Evil Dead 2, which was Sam Raimi's, I guess, second film? Or
yeah, I don't know if
very early Sam Raimi.
I think we might have had one before Evil Dead.
I think that was Evil Dead was definitely his debut. He did like short films beforehand, some of which was well starring Bruce Campbell, but I think Evil Dead was, he came onto the scene with that. He might have had one between that and Evil Dead 2, because there is a jump from Evil Dead 1 is like famous example of no budget or like very low budget filmmaking in the early 80s, to then they had a bit more of a budget for Evil Dead 2.
Okay, so do people please understand who haven't seen it? Evil Dead is from, I think, 87.
Yeah, possibly even earlier than the first one.
So the Evil Dead 2 that we watched for our watch long is mid 80s. There is a Book of the Dead, which a kind of archaeologist / anthropologist discovered. There's some things you can save from the Book of the Dead, which if you read them out, summon like a demon or just some dead people or just some evil.
The usual days.
Yeah.
Deadites.
Yeah, and, as they have come to be called, yeah.
And the main guy, Bruce Campbell.
He plays Ash, yeah.
Yeah, he goes on a kind of holiday to a cabin in the woods, presumably starting that trope off for the very first time.
Possibly.
With his missus. And, I mean, wow, what? Who wants to go first on this? I watched this. It is absolutely balmy. It is just balmy what goes on. So,
in the best way possible. In the best way possible, Neil.
Yeah. I mean, did I enjoy it? Possibly. Yeah, it's mad. Mad. It's kind of zombies-ish type things ensue. So somebody who knows about films, give us an overview of this. I don't even know how to really explain it.
Well, I'll lay down a few things. Firstly, we're talking about Evil Dead 2 because it is a starting point. And that's because, and this is, you can go, by the way, highly recommend just going and watching Bruce Campbell talk about making these films online, because it's always funny. And he was talking about how essentially the first Evil Dead belonged to New Line Cinema and they couldn't get the rights, him and Sam Raimi. This is, the Evil Dead series is kind of their baby. They kind of both came up with it. They both like put a lot of work into it. And they couldn't get the rights back to their own film. So what they had to do to make Evil Dead 2 was they had to essentially start over again. And so Evil Dead 2 is kind of a starting point where you start off with a kind of fresh Ash, who is in the first one. But again, this is a kind of a reboot, recap sort of thing. Hmm. He comes with his girlfriend to the cabin. And you actually can, Bruce Campbell even says this, there's a point in the films where you can actually splice them together and you can almost make Evil Dead 1 through 2 work, but there's still like continuity errors and everything. But yeah, this is essentially just a film in which this character Ash comes to a cabin, his girlfriend gets possessed by the deadites, as it were, and then proceeds to get tortured by the Evil Dead, as it were. And one thing I want to firstly mention is, in terms of Neil, this is your first time watching this, and for you guys as well, actually.
My favorite.
Very much. Were you expecting it to be essentially a episode of or just an installment of the Three Stooges, but with blood and guts instead of custard pies?
Yeah, I think even having been warned that it was mad, I don't think I was fully prepared for how mad it is. I think I probably had some assumptions. I thought it'd be a bit 28 Days Later style, Armies of Zombies. But it's a bit more kind of focused than that. There's less dead baddies about. And they're just kind of basically just tormenting poor old Bruce Campbell. They're also a weird mix of like terrifyingly powerful, but he sort of quite often gets away from them just by slamming a door in their face.
Yeah.
Which is sort of a bit weird.
Which I have my theories about, but I want to go to you guys. Because I bore you guys into my own home to make you watch this. So I want to get some thoughts from you guys. What did you think?
I thought, well, so we watched Evil Dead 1 and 2 back to back, which is an interesting thing to do as well.
Yes.
Because they are very different. But both great in their own ways. The first one is pretty much darker and bleaker, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Whereas the second one, as you say, does the kind of recap at the start and then is just kind of a roller coaster of horrible things happening, but kind of it's pretty goofy about it, or it's kind of having a lot of fun with all of this happening.
It's weird. a tiny bit, obviously loads more violent and horrific, but you know, like a bit like Little Shop of Horrors or like Gremlins or something. You know, like it's got that kind of vibe to it.
A little bit of camp in there.
It does, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like it's not scary.
No.
I'm a bit worried because I'm a bit of a wuss with horror films. I thought it might be scary. I was a bit worried about it. Of all the things it is, it's quite disgusting.
Yeah, definitely.
It's funny at times.
Oh boy, you see the first one.
It's mental, but it's not scary.
No. It's just kind of gross and horrible, but in a very entertaining way.
So, Nick, let's come to you if you haven't heard from you yet. I'd like to hear specifically your take on what happens to his hand.
Okay. Oh, well, I mean, to answer your question first off, Roberto, I had an idea of what, like, Ash means to pop culture. I had I'd seen that before. I'd seen that the fact that there was a man, I didn't know who he was by nature, but I'd seen that there was a man that had a chainsaw strapped to his arm, or as a hand instead. How long ago did we watch this? Like a weekend or like
a week ago?
Yeah. So I had a feeling that was about to happen in some regard. I mean, I suppose it just comes with the nature of the film where it's just like, I think it's just, it has to be done, doesn't it? Like, if some deadite sort of takes you away and you know, you're overcrowded and that's where you have the weapon in tow and you need to strap it to your arm and let havoc reign.
Yeah, really. So his hand gets possessed. The rest of him escapes being possessed. His hand gets possessed. So there's a sizable chunk of the film where he's basically having a ruck with his own hand.
Oh, it's amazing. There's the plate smashing on his own head and he keeps falling over. He does an amazing, like, he pulls his own head and he does a flip. Which can actually, like, if you look at it, that could actually have ended so badly for Bruce Campbell because if he'd landed in the wrong way, that's like possibly broken neck, but he like fully just does it. I've put in my notes just Bruce's commitment, because he's either getting sprayed with like jet sprays of blood, or he's smashing something across his own face, or he's like cackling.
Yeah,
like,
cackling slash crying slash howling.
I think that might be one of my favorite scenes in cinema, when he's looking for his hand and everything in the room suddenly comes to life and starts laughing at him, and and it's not even, they might not have even been possessed. It might have just been that he was genuinely losing his mind.
That bit is, wow. It's a little bit like Beauty and the Beast when all the ferns come
to
the
bite. Isn't it?
But it's also got that horrific thing on the wall, like a moose's head comes to life and starts laughing at him. Oh my God. This film is absolutely mad.
Just to go back to one thing, I think you'd seen the TV show before, Ash versus Evil Dead. Yeah. So yeah, I think like to talk about a bit more about Ash, he is a horror icon in himself, because particularly starting with Evil Dead 2, he kind of becomes, I mean, he takes his lumps. He lots of terrible things happen to him, but he also does pick up a bit of an action hero persona towards the end. Once he's dealt with his own hand by cutting it off, later on in the film, he does strap a chainsaw to it, and that kind of becomes an iconic look for him, especially with his shotgun or his boomstick, as the follow-up film calls it.
Become removable.
The hand. Mm. Yeah. So in the next film, he kind of like he has like a gauntlet on it as well.
I like the story, like the Book of the Dead type thing. I like
the mythology.
I like the little, I don't know what you'd call it, but where basically the reason these dead or these evil things get summoned is because a previous archaeologist / anthropologist / somebody looking into this stuff has recorded himself saying the words, and poor old Ash accidentally presses play, or he's just interested and presses play on this recording, and that's what starts the whole shebang.
Like, definitely.
It's quite smart, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Clever.
They like to play around with like the kind of the Necronomicon as a MacGuffin in these films. And this one kind of has a unique thing that the other films don't do, where they have to get other pages that help them seal up the evil, which leads to like the final set piece, which is utterly incredible. But another thing I want to bring up is the side characters in this one, because there's some in some ways, they're kind of some of the more incidental side characters in the franchise. But also, you have Annie, I think her name is, who's actually probably one of the more capable characters in any of the Evil Dead films, because she, her and Ash kind of form a pretty cool duo at the end where they're trying to seal up the Deadites. But then you have Bobby Joe, I don't even know what her fella's name is, but he has a great, well, essentially when Bobby Joe is taken by the evil trees and slammed against them, he's like forcing them to go out and see them. And there's this, again, to emphasize, Evil Dead 2 is essentially just a comedy with the aesthetic of a horror film. Mm-hmm. And there's this part where the evil's coming for them, as evidenced by the POV shots, which
is
so iconic, so amazing. I mean, it's interesting how easy a trick it must be to just like get someone with a camera and just run at someone.
So for people at home who haven't seen it, how we know the evil's coming, or one of the evil guys coming, is we see from behind the camera, we basically see the camera sprinting towards the house. That's how we know.
And there's this amazing part where Ash goes into the cabin and the evil breaks through and like follows him in, like through like all the walls and stuff. I mean, the filmmaking in general is just, I would actually say, perfect for what this film is. I mean, the practical effects.
Can somebody explain the end to me, please? I'm not the brightest light on the Christmas tree. I know it's like something to do with a prophecy, but so the end, I don't think it's a spoiler alert, because the film's 40 years
ago. Yeah.
So Ash goes through the kind of portal that they first got in through.
Yeah, so the evil is to get rid of the manifestation of evil, which they first have to manifest in the flesh, which is this amazing practical effect of this giant head that comes in and then a tree arm. Amazing. So they have to open a portal, which essentially sucks that away. But because Annie cannot finish the passages because of Ash's hand stabbing her, the portal remains open and Ash gets sucked in and ends up in what looks to be medieval times.
Still with his chainsaw.
Yep, with his chainsaw, with his shotgun, and blows away a Deadite in the sky, which is like a weird pterodactyl goblin thing. Mm. And then, and it kind of works as a payoff to a scene earlier in the film where a hero from the sky in the past kills the Deadites, and you see at the end that's Ash, because he has to check it
as he realizes it's him. Yeah, that's what's happening.
Honestly, that reminded me of Back to the Future Part 2.
Yeah, it is.
Sorry, Ash. Like the ending of Back to the Future 2 as well, where it's just like it's definitely to be continued around here somewhere, and you know, you've got to go back to the past, to the future, and so on to fix the past problems. And
yeah,
I'm looking forward. I quite look forward to seeing Army of Darkness as well.
Me too, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're Army of Darkness, which is the sequel, which actually takes place in that time period and is even more of a... Like, that one is full-on just, like, comedy, whereas this one still kind of has, a bit of, you know, edge to it, whereas that one... In Army of Darkness, you get to see Bruce Campbell's rendition of London Bridges Falling Down, so get ready for that. but, yeah, I think I want to emphasise, like, Sam Raimi's... The way Sam Raimi does this film, the comedy particularly, and even the horror, it is... like set up punchline. Like, for example, when he takes his girlfriend's head into the shed and he puts her head in a vise and he opens the curtain to look for a chainsaw and it's not there, and he's like, where's the chainsaw? And then immediately follows is his girlfriend's headless body with the chainsaw coming in to attack him. And it's just this, it's probably one of the weaker practical effects in the film, but it doesn't detract because it's so funny, because it just starts slamming against him and he's like
and he's so speaking of incidental characters and his girlfriend stuff, credit to Sam Raimi. Like, a lot of horror films from this era are very female exploitative, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first Evil Dead.
Is it?
Well, it has a particular scene involving trees, which is very notorious. And he has actually, he said, like, I've crossed the line, which a lot of filmmakers have done. They've, like, made a film and gone, okay, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But they even kind of nearly reference it in this film with the tree scene in this, but then they kind of subvert your expectations if you've seen the first one. But yeah, I that's what I really like. I think Annie is like a cool like side character to like join Ash in this particular one. I do think it then wavers again in Army of Darkness, I have to admit, but then I think the newest Evil Dead films kind of are really focused on kind of female characters kind of gone, because most horror films are actually, you know, the final girl trope. Yeah. I think a lot of my favorite Letterboxd reviews for the first Evil Dead are Ash is my favorite final girl, because that is essentially the role he fulfills in that film. But yeah, I think what this film is for me is just a showcase of Sam Raimi as a really energetic, funny, and just there to make you have a good time director, which I think will possibly be coming back in Send Help.
Yeah, loads of imagination there.
Yeah, I mean, the Spider-Man films as well. I think we're all quite attached to the Spider-Man trilogy, which, again, kind of some filmmaking tricks, some techniques carry over into those films, and I'm sure definitely will carry over into Send Help. Also, worth mentioning, Bruce Campbell is in all three of the Spider-Man films in a significant cameo in some way. I'm sure you guys know this. Do you know about this?
No, I don't know about this.
So, in the first Spider-Man, he's the wrestling announcer who gives Spider-Man his title, because he goes, I'm the Human Spider, and he's like, that's a terrible name. And he says, the Amazing Spider-Man, which Bruce Campbell loves to boast about online. And in the second one, he's the theater attendant who doesn't let him in. And the third one, he's like a French waiter, which I just love. And again, if you've seen Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, he's in that as well.
Oh, is he?
So he's always in
there. Which is great.
Well, look, that we're running out of time a little bit. That was it was a good watch along. It was one that I hadn't watched.
I'm glad everyone enjoyed it to some extent. Maybe not as much as me.
Do you know what? I'm glad I watched it. It was properly different and interesting and outside my wheelhouse.
It is a sadistic
Yeah.
I'm glad you got out of your comfort zone a bit more to actually watch some horror films. Like.
I did. I was shocked. Absolutely. One of the maddest films I've seen in a long time, just in terms of sheer what on earth is going on in.
But it really is. It really is. I'm sorry, I have to do this. Groovy.
Oh, yeah.
Which is...
This is what he says. Yeah, this is famously what he says when he's put the chainsaw into his hand.
Yeah. I think we can all relate.
Yeah.
But yeah, good film. Thumbs up, I think. Enjoy it, Sam.
Very much so. Yes. Right.
Yeah. Loved it.
Nice. Very good. Right. We'll be back with a very quick look at what is coming up for you to go and see in the next few weeks at The Odyssey. And have a look at Evil Dead. It was on Amazon. That's where I found it. But yeah, well, Evil Dead 2, it's worth a look.
Buy on DVD.
Yeah. All buy it, yeah. Okay, chaps. Right, we haven't got too long left. So we'll have a quick look at a couple of the bits coming up for the Odyssey in the next couple of weeks. And then we're going to choose our next watch-along using a highly scientific new method, which I'm quite excited about. So first of all, Nick, we'll start with you. What should people be looking out for in the next couple of weeks?
So for me, my personal pick is Lord of the Rings, the 2 hours extended edition.
What a film.
We had a quite successful Fellowship of the Ring screening about a couple of weeks ago. Of 300 people coming to watch Fellowship of the Ring. It was really, really cool to see. And of course, to continue that, you have the 2 hours. Whopping coming in at 3.5 hours, but if you can take it, you might as well.
Going in with those films, do they?
Yeah,
that's like they watch them like just 9 hours back to even 10 hours, like because they're sort of the extended ones are like crazy. Yeah,
I mean, it's got a great legacy. I can see no other reason why you can't make it out. 12 o'clock on the 21st of March. Yeah. But I'm confusing myself with what month it is.
Nice, good one. Sam?
I'm looking forward to The Bride, which is the new film by Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Oh, this looks mad and looks weirdly hot on the heels of Frankenstein.
It does, I don't think it's... Well, it's different studios, so I guess it's not connected, but it definitely kind of is... You could watch it as a spiritual kind of accompaniment.
Christian Bale, who is going to go absolutely ham as a monster, isn't he?
Yeah, I haven't seen Christian Bale on anything for a while, actually. No, so I'm looking forward to it.
He gets into his role, so this is going to be meaty, isn't it, from him?
Yeah. And it's Jessie Buckley as the Bride of Frankenstein as well, which is very exciting. Her first big role. Yeah, BAFTA winner, straight after Hamlet. So hopefully, looks really good. Very interesting trailer. It's kind of got a interesting aesthetic. It's set in Chicago in the 30s. So it's kind of a unusual take on the characters and the ideas of Frankenstein. So
yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, how things sort of happen at once. So you hear nothing about Frankenstein for years, and then suddenly, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
a lot of people think about the same kind of thing at the same time. Suddenly there's a kind of glut of Frankenstein-y type things all coming out at once. It's kind of weird.
Simply because of AI and kind of similarities between creating
rewind indeed. Yeah. Very intellectual.
This guy, everything I say. I'm sure policy listeners know this already.
So, Roberto, what should people be looking out for?
Okay, so we talked a lot about some sadistic stuff of Sam Raimi. Let's just go complete opposite end of the spectrum now. Let's talk wholesomeness. Let's talk positivity. We have the new Pixar film coming out. It's a new original IP. It's called Hoppers. This is directed by Daniel Chong, who I actually literally didn't know anything about until recently, but then I found out he's the creator of a show called We Bear Bears, I believe it's called. And I again, didn't know anything about the show, but kind of scrolling through some reviews, found out this guy's actually, apparently this is like quite a beloved series, and then people are saying this is actually a really good extension of that series, like sense of humor particularly. And this looks to be kind of the first Pixar film in a while that I've seen that is just marketing itself as like an out and out comedy, which I think is good. I think I want to see Pixar branch out with their kind of attempt at genres, or just kind of maybe just even more genrefying their own films. I've also just looked, I'm looking at the cast right now. Meryl Streep is apparently in it.
Whoa, that's cool.
Which is like, when you hear that, you're like, what?
Meryl Streep? Crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, especially this late in the Pixar game, you think she would have topped on a bit earlier, but I guess, you know, the Pixar name always carries. So we're showing that.
It really does.
Saturday the 4th of April at 1 o'clock, Thursday the 9th of April at 12:30, and Saturday the 11th at 1 p.m. as well. So if you are looking for a great family film, again, Pixar.
We'll be there. Moonlight will be there. Yeah, we'll absolutely be there. So that is, we're going to do a watch along, a Pixar watch along, and we're going to let fate decide, right?
Indeed.
So we have all chosen a Pixar film that we're going to recommend for the watch along, and then Sam's Wheel of Magic is going to tell us which one we watch. So, Sam, you go first. What are you pushing for?
I'm pushing for Luca, which actually I haven't seen. I'm pushing it for it mostly on that basis. From Nick speaking about it, I know you quite enjoyed it when you saw it.
Yeah, I think it's like, from the last 5 years, from my recollection, that's probably my favourite Pixar movie that they released. It's a lovely sort of simple story set in Italy as well, which I corroborate with. Yeah, it's a really silly, fun tale.
Yeah, no, it's great. I really like that one.
And that's it as well.
So, in the spirit of trying to broaden people's minds, I think pretty much across the board the Pixar films are amazing. You could almost pick anything here. Nod to Encanto, nod to Cars. I'm gonna go Cars 2.
And the world went silent.
The slightly more niche, lesser known brother of Cars. It's got Michael Caine starring as a British agent called Finn McMissile. It's got Eddie Izzard as a kind of goody / baddie. It's an underrated gem from the Pixar stable, and I think you could all benefit from watching it.
I will say, I watched Cars 2 a while ago, but I do actually remember enjoying it, but I was a young man. And so, let's see.
Nick, what are you going for?
So, my pick was Wall-E. I just also have not seen this movie in a while. I think the only time I had watched it was when I saw it in the cinema, and that it was in 2008, I think, is when it came out, 2009, possibly.
Clever Wall-E as well.
It is as well. And I think it actually, genuinely now thinking about it, it speaks to about what we're probably going through as a society right now. And
it's nuts. It's like a kind of, it's obviously a lovely kids.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's almost like a parable of our time.
Right.
Amazing.
And it's got some, there's some beautiful bits in there as well. Like simply just about like the love story between Wall-E and Eve as well.
God, yeah.
So I think it's just a really charming Pixar film. I've not seen it in a while, and I hope it comes up.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of hoping for Wall-E to win now.
I've been meaning to rewatch that film for ages. But I'm gonna go. You guys have all kind of gone a bit, crowd broadened the horizons a bit. I'm gonna be a stalwart, and I'm gonna just say what I think was probably my favorite Pixar film, which is Monsters, Inc. I mean, it might be the perfect voice casting of any two characters ever. You've got John Goodman as Sully, who you can come and see in The Big Lebowski Friday the 27th of March at 7:30, don't we? There you go. I mean, that character, so aggressive, so violent, but Sully, what a beautiful character. I actually love him.
Nod to Steve Buscemi, who is absolutely ideal.
As Randall.
As Randall.
Yeah. It's like he's always been there. It's like those voice actors like came out of that film and that's how they spawned in. And yeah, again, Billy Crystal from our previous watch along with When Harry Met Sally. I just love this film and the whole story with Boo. I'm always looking for an excuse to rewatch this, so here it is.
This is one of those. I'd be happy with any of these. But Sam, spin the cinematic wheel of magic.
Good Foley. Good Foley, Nick. That was it. Oh, here it comes.
Oh, it's Cars 2.
Oh,
yeah.
Here
we go. Here.
Excellent. And, oh, my God. If any of you is rude about Cars 2.
No.
I think we're going to get a spike in viewership on the next podcast.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. I'm very excited. Right, Cars 2 watch log it is. So in that case, because he stars the amazing Flint Missile, we're going to have to say goodbye in the style of Michael Caine. Roberto, I'd like to see you first, please.
Have we done this before? Not to throw a spanner in the works?
Almost certainly.
I guess. But,
To improve on it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Right.
We'll go back and see if it's better.
Set up. Right. Here we go. Sorry, I just can't envision the voice I was going to do. Okay. All right, there, chaps. That's Logan. Michael, you go first, Sam, honestly.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm trying to think. How's he sound? How's he sound?
Batman.
See, Master Wayne.
Master Wayne, thank you for listening, everybody, to this episode of The Podyssey. See you again soon.
That was more Dick Van Dyke.
It was, wasn't it? Really.
Terrifying Michael Caine. Okay. You never want to meet.
Okay, I'll get mine out of the way. Yeah. Master Wayne, if you don't listen to The Podyssey, I'm going to have to leave. Tune in next time in April. Go see Hoppers.
Nicholas Pease, one of your first jobs as supervisor. It's unnail this.
Ah, right, sorry. Hello, chaps. Listen to The Podyssey next month and this month.
Very good.
Thanks very much.
I need you to listen to The Bloody Podyssey, right? Right.
There you go. Perfect.
Okay, no good ones there. Apologies to Michael Caine and anybody listening still. Right, thank you very much. Say goodbye, chaps.
Thank you. See you soon.
Cars 2 watch along next week. Next month, sorry.